Kester Roger Marcus Ball, age 16. Gerard Barron Sr., age 67. Simon Bell, age 17. Barry Sidney Bennett, age 26. David John Benson, age 22. David William Birtle, age 22.
Well, that's Kenny Dalglish, the former Liverpool manager. And finally, the truth. After 23 years, an independent report into the Hillsborough disaster revealed the true extent of failings on that day when 96 Liverpool supporters died during an FA Cup tie against Nottingham Forest. It found that the South Yorkshire Police and Ambulance Services made strenuous attempts to deflect the blame on the innocent fans. Prime Minister David Cameron said he is profoundly sorry. Let's speak to Rogan Taylor this morning, Chair of the Football Supporters Association in 1989. Morning to you, Rogan.
Good morning.
You were at the game.
I was indeed.
What are your memories?
I was in the stand, in the West Stand down Penistone Road, i.e. the full length of the pitch. But we all had to go in through the Leppings Lane turnstiles because the police had shut all the turnstiles on Penistone Road. There about 18 turnstiles were shut to theoretically keep the Forest fans away from the Liverpool fans for some really odd reason. And so that was one of the reasons why, of course, people couldn't get in. There was a tremendous crush. The turnstiles at Leppings Lane are in an enclosed area. It's like a court. It's a sort of bottleneck. Once you're in, you can't turn round and go. But it's not like a turnstile on an open street where if you're thinking, oh, I don't like the feel of this, I think I'll go and leave it for 20 minutes and come back later when the queues died down. You couldn't get away. And I was with an off-duty policeman from Liverpool who was always also involved in the Football Supporters Association, which both him and I had actually launched after the Heysel Stadium tragedy 4 years earlier. And we were, I mean, it was hell getting in. And by the time we'd struggled for, you know, half an hour or so, eventually got to the turnstiles, showed our tickets and got in, I had to hold the off-duty policeman down from attacking an on-duty South Yorkshire policeman for the utter failure to form queues, and you know how the Brits are about queues. I mean, once you form a queue, it has its own discipline, doesn't it? Because people in the queue see anybody bumping up, go, hey, mate, you're behind me. I've been here for an hour. You know, you're at the back. And indeed, the year before, that's in fact what the police did at this same semi-final match against Nottingham Forest. Their queues were formed and they provide their own discipline. So that was my opening memory. What a cock-up the police are making of this.
Well,
then sitting in the stand, looking at your own home fans, which you always do when you arrive at for games like this. And I was so shocked simply by the vision, and this would be 20-3, I would think, then. You know, crowds have their own movement, don't they? They sway around like a sea anemone at the bottom of the ocean. They have ripples and it's a living creature, a crowd. This one was like people set in concrete. There was no movement at all. It was clearly absolutely packed. Now, this was 15 minutes before Chief Inspector David Duckinfield, match commander on the day, invited another couple of thousand people to walk down that tunnel into those two pens 3 and 4. And so we watched it unfold and went through that process, which I suppose many people did that afternoon, of thinking, oh my God, it looks bad down there. Look at how many. So look, people are trying to get out. What's going on? It must be murder in there. We've all been in. We're football fans. We've all been in crushes. we know grounds that are difficult to get in, difficult to get out. And then suddenly realising when, of course, people spilled out onto the pitch, when the gate was finally opened to let people out of that pen onto the pitch. And, you know, you're seeing people lying down as if they'd just collapsed. And people being carried through those gates. And you begin to think, oh, my God, what's been going on in there? And then when the fans started ripping the advertising hoardings down and using them as stretchers and running the full length of the pitch, well, you know, past the halfway line to get into what turned out to be the gymnasium, which became a mortuary. Of course, they were running right past below us in the stand that we were in. And, you began to realize, you know what? That guy's dead. Someone's dead in there. And then, yeah, I remember myself, and I was with a guy who was working at the Centre for Football Research at Leicester University, John Williams. John and I immediately, of course, were on the case because we're not just football fans. We're also people who are professionally engaged with the game in the sense of that's what we spend our life thinking about and talking about and writing books about and whatever. And so we're out the back looking down a stairway at the back of that West Stand, and we can count 13 dead bodies. And so it ratchets up. But even so, I mean, we were held back, of course, that everyone was kept in the ground for about an hour or so, football match well and truly abandoned. And of course, I'm staying because I'm already hearing from people that the police are saying that the fans broke the doors down and rushed in and, you know, effectively killed themselves. And also a report that the Secretary General of UEFA described wild animals, what was the phrase, wild animals tearing into an arena. And I knew at that moment what was going to happen. And so I found Andy Williamson, a guy who's currently the chief operating officer at the Football League, was then a much more minor official, but somebody I'd met in my role as chairman of the Football Supporters Association, because I wanted to stay and examine the gates with a responsible witness, as it were. And as I headed down, now the ground completely empty, stood on those terraces at Pen 3 and 4. And I mean, it was like standing on, I don't know, you know, a trench at the Somme or something, you know, ripped and bloodied clothing on the floor, twisted metal from collapsed safety barriers, and an air of death lingering about the place that, you know, was just, I mean, it was absolutely horrific. And one or two fans wandering around like lost souls, one of whom came up to me, obviously recognised me and came up to me and he said, Rogan, it's 50 dead. And even at that point, I said, no, it won't be that bad. It won't be that bad. And then that journey, well, examining the doors, of course, nothing wrong with the doors sign of them being.
And then, crossed. Rogan, afterwards, the blame game started and that horrendous headline
game started 5 minutes after the game was stopped, in truth, when Graham Kelly made it to the police observation box where David Duckinfield was installed to say, why is the game stopped? What the hell's going on with the crowd here? And Duckinfield said, the fans broke the doors down and rushed in. We've got a disaster on our hands.
What do you make of the apology in the front page of Today's Sun? The real
Nothing
truth.
At all. They can go swivel as far as we in Liverpool are concerned. I think that Cameron's apology carries real weight on behalf of the country, on behalf of the government, and on behalf of all the previous governments, as came through when the Labour politicians stood up as well, the recognition that for it to take 23 years to establish a truth that we knew within 20 minutes is just, you know, literally, it's mind-boggling. And the depth of the conspiracy and the breadth of the conspiracy and the revelation that it involved the doctoring of statements even by those working on the emergency services. We knew they were doing blood alcohol tests on a 10-year-old boy. That kind of stuff was well known for anybody who had taken any serious interest in it. And, of course, we knew that statement doctorings had taken place and that videos had probably also disappeared. But, you know, that extensive revelation about the operation of this triumvirate of power, police, government, and the Murdoch media, which we've seen crucified at the Levinson inquiry over the last few months. That was the same power operating then, 23 years ago. You know, Mrs. Thatcher was more worried about what was going to happen to her flagship, you know, Football Spectators Act, which was a ludicrous bill designed to make us all walk around with the words football fan tattooed on our forehead, or the modern equivalent. You know, I mean, that, you know, that was the way they thought about us. And I don't mean just us as Scousers, just us as Liverpool fans, just us as, you know, football fans. This is the way England works. It's the way it worked then, and it had been working like that for many years. And I think for a lot of people yesterday, that realisation, which we have known in this city for many, many years, that realisation struck home that this is the way established power defends itself without any compunction, going through the criminal records of the dead to see if they can get extra smear material. That's how it works. And I'll tell you what, if this disaster had happened anywhere else in Europe, the entire legal process would have been different. And if you look at what happened after Heysel, you know, the secretary of the Belgian FA got 6 months. The match commander at high, and there was much clearer evidence of genuine, you know, public order issues involving the fans. And yet those who should carry responsibility carried it. I don't know whether you remember when that stand collapsed in France. There's a little island off the south of France, wasn't it, where they used to lock Napoleon up, I think. And they'd drawn, I think it was, they'd drawn Marseille in an FA Cup, a French FA Cup game. And a temporary stand was put up to make a few more bob selling tickets, which collapsed and killed a couple of dozen people or thereabouts. You know, the secretary of the French FA went down for that. What happened in England when, as a public event, 45,000 members of the British citizenry were in that ground, and 96 of them were crushed to death? And I've had conversations, I was talking to some Germans yesterday, and they were saying, you know, what happened to the officer in charge of the police? Nothing. What about the club that staged the game? Nothing. But they didn't have a live safety certificate. Nothing. What about the local authority that was responsible for issuing that? Nothing. What about the FA? It was their semi-final. Didn't they want to know whether there was a life safety certificate at the ground they'd designated? Nope, nothing. What, did nobody take any responsibility? Answer, no.
And now we know that there were files doctored, there was evidence hidden, and the families have made it very, very clear that if justice is not seen to be done, they will pursue it themselves. I heard one family member say they will do exactly in the future what they did in the past. If government and the state don't deliver, they'll take it off their hands.
Well, that's right. I mean, this was a lone battle. Those families and the supporters around them, and, you know, the community of the city at large, of course, you know, it's been a long, because, you know, everyone else had given this all up. It was all, oh, for God's sake, come on, it's years ago, forget it, get on with life. You know, what's the matter with you? It was a mess. We know it was a mess. And most people bought the line, of course, backed as it was initially by the Murdoch newspapers, and then, of course, by, you know, the other usual suspects that you would count in on an argument like that. And, of course, you know, remember, this is Liverpool. It's not a difficult sell. We know the end of the sticky stick quite well. In fact, you know, goes right back to the Irish famine. You know, the city more or less inherited the entire prejudice that was once directed by the British ruling class towards the largely Catholic Irish of the south, of course. And in fact, at one point after after Hillsborough, I actually laid alongside the leaders, leader columns from the Times newspaper in the spring of 1948 after that disastrous complete failure of the potato crop in 1845.
You have given us
46. I laid the Times leaders alongside a couple of one in the Daily Mail, I think, and one in the Sun. And you know what? Apart from the style of the language, they said exactly the same thing.
Rogan, you've been very, very passionate this morning, and thank you so, so much.
No, you're welcome,
for
mate.
Joining us today, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank
On with
you.
The show.
Morning to you. Morning to you.